When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
The T-Biz podcast delivers T-news that you need to know. A recap of the week's major headlines with commentary and cultural trends hosted by Dan Bolton. It is the voice of origin for tea professionals and enthusiasts worldwide.
Tea nourishes and inspires. It is an ancient plant-based medicine that heals and energizes the body while soothes the mind. Transforming the leaf requires a fusion of artistry, craftsmanship, and commerce. The tea trade is fundamentally local, yet exerts a global influence, generating $260 billion in sales and employing millions to enhance the well-being of all. Hello, everyone. Here are this week's headlines. The cost of tariffs is mounting. June is cold tea month, and iced and cold brew teas are rising as functional standouts in the wellness beverage movement. And the inaugural Paris Tea Festival opens Saturday in the City of Lights. Plus, relentlessly seeking uniformity, elite tea tasters can detect minute differences in aroma, taste, mouthfeel, and aftertaste, but fewer super tasters. Instead, they are masters of association, disciplined to use precise industry-accepted terms in their evaluations. The best develop deep practical knowledge that bridges production, procurement, and marketing, combining base teas to achieve consistent taste profiles across batches and seasons without compromising quality. Sebastian Michaelis, head of tea at Tata Consumer Products, joins T-Biz for a fascinating and insightful conversation about the joys and challenges of tasting thousands of teas weekly for more than 20 years. More in a minute. But first, this important message.
What happens when businesses along the tea supply chain get together and support women and children in tea communities? The Mother and Child-Friendly Seal for Responsible Business is creating long-term positive impacts, making your cup of Ceylon tea all the sweeter. Learn more at srilanka-motherandchildseal.org.
Tariffs added approximately $22.7 billion to the cost of U.S. imported goods through May. Through April, the U.S. imported $328.4 million worth of tea from all trading partners, representing a 3% increase compared to the same period last year. Assuming a base rate of 10%, U.S. wholesale and retail tea buyers would have paid as much as $32.8 million had tariffs been enforced for the entire month. May data for tea imports are not yet available on the USDA Foreign Agricultural Services Global Agricultural Trade System database. The volume of tea imports through April from all countries totaled 68.4 million kilos, up 6% compared to January through April of 2024. The January and February volumes exceeded those of the comparable period in 2024, but declined starting in March. April volume was 17.1 million kilos, down by 2 million kilos from April 2024. The volume of Chinese tea imports year to date declined by 25% to 7.4 million kilos following a series of tariff increases beginning in February. The declared value of Chinese tea is down 14% to $40.5 million year to date. The average unit value declined to $5.50 per kilo, down from $6.40 per kilo during the first 4 months of 2024. The value of Vietnamese tea, meanwhile, year to date, has increased by 4% to $3.8 million on volume of 2.4 million kilos of tea. Assuming a base rate of 10%, U.S. wholesale and retail tea buyers would have paid as much as $380,000 in tariffs for Vietnamese tea. The base rate remains 10% until July 9th. After that, so-called reciprocal tariffs would increase significantly. Tea will mirror the global impact as import volumes decline, along with the value of goods coming from almost every country. Duties on Chinese goods reduced from 125% to 30% are by far the most severe, totaling $31.3 billion since 2018. The current duty on tea is 37.5%. Importers rushed to add inventory before the higher rates were suspended in April, but declines in volume suggest that pre-tariff rush to land goods has evolved into a wait and see. Tea still at sea on July 9th is subject to tariffs increasing from 10 to 50%. Major tea trading partners include Vietnam with a 46% reciprocal tariff, Sri Lanka facing a 44% reciprocal tariff, Bangladesh 37%, Switzerland 31%, India 26%, South Korea 25%, and Japan 24%. Countries in the European Union face a 20% duty on tea. Tim Smith, a veteran tea retailer in Omaha, Nebraska, writes, quote, "We are already seeing product shortages in the market as importers have cut back or eliminated shipments until more clarity is provided. The longer this goes on, the more impact will be noted in the supply chain. Extended effects may deeply impact holiday sales if there are lags in shipments arriving," end quote. The Trump administration predicted trading partners would sign 90 bilateral trade agreements in 90 days, but thus far only the UK has negotiated a contract. This may result in the further postponement of the enforcement of reciprocal rates on July 9th. Business Insight. Meanwhile, coffee supplier J.M. Smucker, which owns the Folgers and Cafe Bustelo brands, announced it will increase prices to offset the Trump administration's 10% tariffs. CEO Mark Smucker told investors, quote, "The current U.S. tariff impact on green coffee is our largest exposure that we have to manage on top of navigating record high costs. We currently purchase approximately 500 million pounds of green coffee annually, with the majority coming from Brazil and Vietnam," end quote. Price hikes contributed to an 11% increase in net sales for U.S. retail coffee, according to Beverage Daily. Profit, however, was neutral year over year due to higher commodity costs. Smucker said that the at-home category remains, quote, "strong and resilient," end quote, accounting for 70% of all coffee drinking occasions. Iced teas, cold brewed teas, and ready-to-drink teas are undergoing a strategic transformation, evolving beyond their traditional roles as refreshment and caffeine delivery to serve a broader array of health and wellness goals. Brands are increasingly focusing on functionality as a new frontier for creating value and enhancing consumer appeal. Once dominated by messaging around energy, hydration, caffeine, and mental alertness, today's functional iced teas are evolving to support a broad range of health and wellness goals, a shift driven by both post-pandemic health awareness and the growing demand for clean-label food-as-medicine solutions. The idea of food-as-medicine has made transparency, natural sourcing, and function-driven formulations core expectations. Iced tea drinkers are actively seeking fewer ingredients, no synthetics, and recognizable superfoods and botanical inclusions in blends. Here are four key cold tea trends. Approximately 45% of shoppers expressed a desire for immune-supporting varieties, According to a Data Central Insight report, 43% of U.S. shoppers seek antioxidants in their tea refreshers, 32% seek probiotics, and 6% are seeking B vitamins. As a result, tea formulators are increasingly embracing functionality beyond just energy and alertness. Next, tea consumers are opting for flavorful and functional tea refreshers and tea lattes instead of coffee to reduce their caffeine intake later in the day. Matcha lattes account for a significant portion of matcha's five-year growth spurt, driven by convenience and the health benefits associated with this Japanese tea. A cup of matcha has about 70 milligrams of caffeine, which is double that of a brewed cup of tea, but half the 100 to 140 milligrams found in a cup of coffee. Next, an increasingly conscientious consumer base associates ethical production with product quality. Although the price premium for sustainability has decreased in dollar terms from 40% to 27%, iced tea brands with strong social and environmental credentials continue to command higher trust and loyalty, leading to repeat purchase behavior and non-price-based competitive advantages. Finally, consumers, particularly Generation Z and younger millennials, expect brands to show measurable social impact. This encompasses support for smallholder farmers, living wages, community reinvestment, and carbon offset initiatives. Marketing emphasizes its support for sustainable farming practices and water stewardship in sourcing regions. Business Insight. Read the full report on iced tea, cold brewed tea, and the fast-growing refrigerated tea segment, as well as ready-to-drink tea sold in cans and bottles, in the summer 2025 issue of Tea Journey magazine. Visit www.teajourney.pub. The inaugural two-day Paris Tea Festival this weekend, June 14th, 15th, offers an expansive program of immersive experiences, including tastings, tours, and demonstrations, as well as sessions on growing tea and stagings of cultural tea preparation rituals, alongside conference sessions and workshops. Events take place in several locations, including tea gardens in Paris and in Bigorre, France, on Saturday, June 14th. On Sunday, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., the exhibit hall and conference sessions will be held at the Maison International University campus. The event showcases 40 tea houses, primarily located in France. Major sponsors include Brita France, Solidarité, and Tea Magazine. Supporting partners including AVPA and Myosha in the Netherlands and Tea Journey magazine. There are 50 exhibitors and 20 scheduled events. Speakers include Kevin Gascon with Camellia Sinensis in Montreal, adventurer Jeff Fuchs, who traveled the Tea Horse Trail, author Caron Rouzventre, who wrote Tea in China, Jeremy Temen, and Patrice Rouviard, Elodie Morabito, and Hassan Erndur, who discusses tea in Turkey. Business Insight. Tea festivals are experiencing a resurgence worldwide. Maria Kochman inspired a legion of volunteers to organize the Paris Tea Festival, befitting a city long known for its appreciation of tea. Maria calls the event her, quote, crazy project, but Parisians will find the tours, tastings, and opportunity to explore tea culture inspiring. Maria, a tea sommelier and co-founder of the Tea Circle in Brussels, is a brilliant example of a tea superconnector. And now, a word from this week's sponsor.
Hi, I'm Nish. I grew up in an organic tea farm and founded Nepal Tea Collective in 2016. Tea is not just a beverage for me, but a catalyst for social change, sustainably empowering hardworking artisans like my parents for the past 30 years. I'm on a mission to make the whole world aware of the goodness of Nepali teas and the good that comes from supporting growers in this remarkable land. If you haven't tasted Nepali teas yet, you're missing out. Our award-winning teas are making headlines. Find out why Visit Nepal Tea Collective's website to get a free sample of this extraordinary taste of the Himalayas. That's nepalteacollective.com. Or just send me an email at nish, N-I-S-H, at nepalteacollective.com. Cheers.
Elite tea tasters can detect minute differences in aroma, taste, mouthfeel, and aftertaste, but few are super tasters. Instead, they are masters of association, disciplined in the use of precise industry-accepted terms in their evaluations. The best develop deep practical knowledge that bridges production, procurement, and marketing, combining base teas to achieve consistent taste profiles across batches and seasons without compromising quality. Sebastian Michaelis, head of tea at Tata Consumer Products, joins TeaBiz for a fascinating and insightful conversation about the joys and challenges of tasting thousands of teas weekly for over 20 years. Sebastian Michaelis is head of tea for the international division of Tata Consumer Products. A renowned tea expert with a 20-year career in the tea trade, he has spent a significant portion of his career based in Kenya, Malawi, and India. He oversees sourcing of the supply chain and product development at the Tetley brand. He has worked extensively with the Ethical Tea Partnership, Reinforced Alliance, and other collaborators to support a thriving, socially just, and environmentally sustainable tea sector, emphasizing sustainable sourcing and responsible tea practices. We last saw each other at the Global Tea Conference in Sri Lanka last summer. It's nice to reconnect.
You're good to see you too. Good to see you too.
When did you decide to pursue tea tasting as a professional skill?
I joined Tetley back in 2005. I say Tetley, we're Tata Consumer Products, but when I joined it was Tetley, and that's the main brand that I'm kind of responsible for. I'd just graduated from university, so I'd studied philosophy at the University of Sussex in Brighton in the UK, and I wasn't really sure what career I wanted to pursue, but I did know I wanted to do something a bit different. I mean, studying philosophy, obviously, it wasn't exactly a career-focused degree. I think it gets a bit of a bad rap as a subject, but actually it's helped me tremendously in my tea career because it teaches you critical thinking, looking at the bigger picture, interpreting complex problems. And these are kind of all skills that are very useful in supply chain, especially. So, yeah, a friend of mine spotted an advert for a tea taster, which simply said, do you like tea? Do you like to travel? And do you have a degree? And knowing that I wanted a slightly unconventional job, my friend sent it to me and I applied. And the process involved several telephone interviews and a two-day assessment center. And I was pitched up against, I think, 11 or 12 other candidates. And I was lucky enough to be offered the trainee role, along with Paul Jeffries, who works at Finley's now. And the trainee scheme, it requires you to taste hundreds of teas every week to build up your palate, learning the ropes of buying and blending, spending about a year abroad in different tea origins, visiting tea estates, going to the auction. And it takes about 5-6 years typically to graduate. I feel enormously privileged that I managed to secure the role. I think it's the best training for a tea taster in the world. So I'm sure there'll be others who contest it, but you'll find ex-Tetley people in tea companies around the world because of the intense training and exposure to different types of teas, because obviously a large part of our portfolio is tea bag, the CTC teas, but we have so many different products around the world, which is everything from a tea bag tea to your more artisanal loose leaf type teas. So we get exposure to everything, which is wonderful. You know, it's about the best part of the job.
Interestingly, they were not looking for super tasters. Why is that?
In fact, the only physical constraint, which was part of the interview process, was I actually had to do a colorblindness test. And there was, in fact, one person on our panel of candidates who sadly was colorblind and wasn't aware of that constraint, because the visual is so important. Anyone can taste. ultimately, you have to have some sort of physical ability. In fact, you don't even, as you say, don't have to be a super taster in the sense of the number of taste buds you have. And actually, I've read in certain papers that being a super taster can be sometimes a hindrance because you're having too much stimulation. And what tasting is about is association. It's a language, ultimately. It's about being able to put a word to a particular sensation that you're getting, in the same way that with vision you're able to identify colors, and you know, someone who studies maps, they can spot things better, or people who go foraging for mushrooms, they can pick it out better because they train their brain that particular way. So it's about experience, and that's what I was, you know, privileged to have within Tetley. Is I was tasting, I still do, but when I first started tasting, you know, hundreds of teas a day, and your brain just slowly tunes in to the language being used by the expert taster, and over time you learn that vocabulary. You just need to taste a lot of tea, which I don't mind. It's good fun.
What other life experiences have you found helpful?
I've traveled quite a lot, and I think a large part of the role being a buyer as well is being adaptable to different cultures. You know, it's a relationship business. It's a business which you... knowing the producer, knowing the circumstances on the ground makes such a big difference, and being able to empathize with challenges. You know, it's a long game. People stay in tea for decades. So you have to build those relationships in order to be able to really get the right teas that you need, obviously at the right price and whatever else. I've got a bit of a mixed Mongol background in that my mother's Polish and my dad's Dutch, and we've got Russian family and we've got German family. And so I've always been very transient in my youth. So I think that was part of it, really.
Are there some teas or tea styles that resonate with you?
Yeah, I mean, I like that you asked it that way. People always say, what's your favorite tea? Which is the typical question. But obviously, as you know, the great thing about tea is the choice. And I wouldn't ever be able to say, like, it's, you know, this is the one tea I always drink. The ones that resonate, Angie White is, Angie Bai Cha is one that I absolutely adore. And it's, for those who aren't familiar, it's, you know, it's not a white tea, it's a green tea, but it's kind of gets its name from the very light. It looks almost like the inside of a cucumber, you know, that kind of light green cut and hue. Although it's quite a light cup, it's such an intense flavor, a sweetness to it, which I absolutely adore. Another one that really resonates, I was very lucky when I went to visit Wuyi Mountains, I tried a really authentic Lapsang Bui, which is kind of the precursor for Lapsang Souchongs, but the Buis are much lighter. I'm not a big smoky tea fan, but it tastes very, very nice, intense, earthy flavor. The tea I drink the most of is probably a blend of East of Rift, KCDAs, Kenyan teas, Rwandans, Assams, you know, what we'd call in the UK a builder's brew. Something which is kind of what you'd have as a chai in India. I love the great thing about tea is you've got the choices of times of days when you drink them. For me, that's my espresso in the morning. You know, it's a strong cup of black tea with milk, which to some tea professionals, you know, can be a bit snobby about it. But for me, a black CTCT, it's a completely different product to a more artisanal green tea from China or Japan, for instance, and they serve different needs. So I love them all. So I say those are three that I can pick out as kind of that resonate, I suppose.
Are there teas that you're better at describing as a category or class, even if they're not your personal favorites?
Perhaps the best way to answer it is to describe, if you don't mind me to describe a bit how we taste tea or how I've learned to taste tea. So when I joined Tetley, I think a year before, introduced a new tasting language, which we call Uhuru, which in Swahili means freedom. And that's exactly what it does. It gives you this freedom to be able to classify teas in a very specific way. So we grade teas, and this is black teas, I should add. We have a separate language for green, but we grade black teas using four parameters, which are zing, color, sparkle, and body. And slightly funny words, but Zing is the overall impact the tea has on your palate when you first slurp. And it's the intensity of it and how quickly it goes away when you spit it out. And the way that I try and describe it is you can get a quite a low quality tea or low zing tea, as we would classify it, and brew it very strong, but it would still be low zing. I won't name any names just not to offend any countries, but a high zing tea, you know, a high grown Rwandan tea, for instance, that flavor lasts and it stays there for a long time. A lot of our consumers drink with milk because we do a lot of blends for the UK and for Canada, the US, Middle East as well. It's anything from the very reds, purplish reds, which you can get from Malawi, up through your oranges and yellows, very yellows. And color is important for us because a lot of our consumers like a strong cup of tea, and color in the liquor is kind of what denotes how much it's brewed. Mm-hmm. And then we have sparkle, which is the purity of that color. So the way to think about it is you can imagine a brand new red car that's come out of the shop floor. You know, it sparkles. It's kind of brand new versus one that's been on the dusty road for a few weeks. It's the dullness versus brightness, really, of the liquor, which, you know, you kind of look at and you can see it on the rim where the tea meets the crockery. You can see the kind of purity of color. And obviously, higher sparkle teas tend to be better zing. They tend to be better quality. And the fourth parameter is body, which self-explanatory is the thickness, the viscosity of the tea, which for us brings out roundness in the cup. So we grade teas on those four parameters on a scale of anywhere between 1 to 40. So we can very precisely put a number to it, which what that enables us to do is it's quite simple in a way. If you have a tea which is a 10 for color and another which is 30 for color and you blend them 50-50, then the result will be a 20 for color. So this enables us to be able to not only classify teas very precisely, but also speak the language with everyone who knows this language. So we have an office in Kenya and Malawi, and we have a shorthand for our different components, as we call them. So I could say to our office that the 4FY44BRA was a bit dull, and then they'll know what that means, and then they can adjust what teas are being purchased, that sort of thing.
So your objective is consistency, right?
Exactly, and that's why I've got a job, which is great, because, you know, it's the very nature of tea that it's obviously inconsistent, and it's not, you know, whilst coffee has its variety, they're obviously able to classify it, let's say, in an easier way into certain buckets, and therefore have futures markets and things like that. Obviously, tea varies depending on the weather, depending on the factory manager that day, depending on the humidity. I think the language serves two purposes. One, it's to get the best out of the teas that we're putting into a blend. So we buy the Assam teas for the body, for the gutsiness, for the maltiness. We buy the Kenyan teas for the hardness, for that slight astringency that can lift the blend. So it's about getting the best out of the different origins, which that language allows us to do. And as you say, to get that consistency. And it allows us to, you can pick up a packet of Tetley today and another one tomorrow, and it'll taste exactly the same, but the actual constituent parts will vary. Not hugely, obviously, but within a certain parameter. So yeah, that's really the role is the consumer has an expectation of the brand, and we're trying to make sure that they feel like, yeah, it's always the same.
It's the consumers who are inconsistent, right?
It's a quandary for us in a way, because you're absolutely right. People want, they drink their tea in different ways, you know, and there'll be some people who put a tea bag in water for 10 seconds and throw it out. Others who go for more artisanal teas. Everyone's got their tastes, and, you know, we're not there to tell them what is right or wrong. We're there to serve kind of how they brew their tea. The trouble is, though, when you talk to consumers and you try and do consumer research and say, do you prefer that one or that one or that one? Right. And obviously, a lot of it can be nuanced. It's very hard for people to articulate it because they're not used to the language. They're not used to identifying it in the same way a tea taster would. So trying to hone down to what a consumer actually likes, not impossible, but actually very challenging. But they know what they like, and if there's a change, they notice change. And that's, again, our senses are built around that. It's about noticing What's moved? What's different? They don't know why it's wrong or what's happened, but they know something's not quite right. And that's why we have to protect kind of the blend.
I'm sure our listeners found this very helpful. Intrigued by what you heard in today's podcast? Would you like to learn more from our global network of T-Biz journalists and tea experts? Remember to visit the T-Biz website for more comprehensive coverage. That's www.t-biz.com. Thanks for listening. Farewell till next week.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.